Good morning, everyone. So I want to introduce our speaker today is Reed Ryan. He is the president of baseball operations at the Astros organization. He's been in that position since 2013. As you may have known, if you've been out to the field in the last few years, he really emphasized the fan experience. He's always out in the stands. In fact, that's where Reed got to meet our rector, Russ, and chatted last season. And we asked him to come speak, and he was kind enough to do that. So he's been very active in the community, participates in youth baseball, softball clinics with at-risk kids, very involved with Greater Houston Partnership, Spring Spirit Baseball, which is an organization that St. Martin supports through Revision, Bob, and also through other activities. And he's also a member of a church a little bit farther west down on Woodway. So we're really glad to have him here. But before the Astros, Reed was the CEO of both the Corpus Christi Hooks and the Round Rock Express, and two of the top franchises in minor league baseball. If you've ever been to a Hooks game, you'll know why. And a pitcher at University of Texas and TCU, had garnered two Southwest Conference titles back in the 90s, and he pitched for the minor leagues for 2 years. But his greatest claim to fame is he had the best non-paying job in Major League Baseball. He was a bat boy in the 80s. That's a pretty awesome job. So he and his wife, Nicole, are proud parents of one son, Jackson, and two daughters, Victoria and Ella, and we're very happy to have them here today. So please welcome Reed Ryan. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Russ, Chad. Good morning, everybody. How y'all doing? Well, it is great to be here today. I really appreciate this opportunity, especially with the rain. I didn't know anybody was going to be here today. I was like going, man, it's going to be me and the walls. So it's great to see so many smiling faces out here and some friends in the room today. So yesterday was a big day for the Astros. Jeff Bagwell got voted into the Hall of Fame. Will be the second Astro, yeah. Second Astro to be enshrined. It's funny because we've actually had a lot of people in the Hall of Fame. You know, Joe Morgan, my dad, Nolan Ryan. We will claim a little bit of Randy Johnson. He had a good run. And even yesterday with Pudge going in, he had a stint with the Astros. So pretty good Hall of Fame players we've had, but only two that will be wearing Astro caps. So that will be July 30th. But it's an exciting year for our organization right now. Going into 2017, we got a lot of really exciting things, some really good players. Beltran's back. We made some trades. We've improved the ball club. We got a new spring training facility starting in Palm Beach. Monday we move in, so our guys will be moving in. No more Kissimmee. After 32 years, we'll be in a new home with the Washington Nationals. A lot of folks know we're replacing Talis Hill in center field. Some like it, some don't. When we announced we were opening Torchy's Tacos and Shake Shack out there, that at least softened the blow a little bit for some people. So it's a great time to be a Houston Astro, and it's going to be a fun run this season. But I didn't come today just to talk about our club and the baseball, though at the end I would love to open it up to any questions anybody has. But when Chad reached out to me, he said, hey, what I'd like you to really do is talk a little bit about your faith and maybe how you use it in work or how it affects you in work. And so to do that, I really wanted to go back a little bit and share a little bit of my story. Most people know my dad is Nolan Ryan, Major League Hall of Famer. I was born in the game of baseball. He was with the Mets when I was born, got traded to the Angels, obviously came back here to the Astros for most of the 80s, and then ended up his career with the Rangers. And our family has owned, worked, or played professional baseball my entire life. We have been in this game my entire life. And so for me, sort of my story really in a lot of ways with my Christian faith begins in 1979. I used to tell everybody as a kid growing up, my parents were very good about getting us to church. I have a younger brother, 4 years younger, a sister, 5 years younger. And it was amazing. They always found a church, whether we were in California or here in Texas, that had monthly services. It was amazing. We would show up once a month and there would be a service going on. So, you know, it's awesome when you find those places. But they made an effort. Although we weren't there every Sunday, they made an effort. And so in 1979, my dad was summertime. He was in Boston. He was playing for the against the Red Sox. I was playing for Villa Park Pee Wee. And I had just gotten my first ever, I should have brought the picture, I've got it on my phone, but My kids don't believe it. We played in jeans. How many people here like played in jeans? You just got a T-shirt, you know, and we didn't even have helmets. We had like this leather kind of head strap deal. And so I'm playing for Villa Park Pee Wee. First time I've ever been on a team. Come home in my front yard. You know, we have no video games or anything back then. And we're out playing hot box in the front yard. And anybody remembers hot box? You have two bases and you just practice being a rundown with some of the kids in the neighborhood. And these biker, I say biker, they were BMX kind of bully kids, came down the street and started making fun of us and picking on us. And they started beating us up. And one of the kids kind of grabbed me and was pulling my jersey over my head. And I broke to run away from them to go back to my house. And I ran across the street and a girl ran me over with her car. And it broke my leg. I lost my kidney and my spleen. But I was laying in the street. And all I remember was just saying to God, God, please don't let me die. Please don't let me die. And paramedics came. My leg was sideways, broke my femur. And ended up spending 10 weeks in the hospital in traction and then 10 more weeks in a body cast back in the old days. And so I just made a commitment to God that I felt like he had saved my life, that he had a plan for my life. And I just said, when I get out of this hospital, when I get out of this body cast, I'm not going to waste one moment, that you have something for me, a bigger plan. And so as I've gone on in life, I'm 45 today, I think my struggle has been since that time, what I want versus what God wants for my life. I think we all fight it. And right when you think you got it licked, man, it comes back around and bites you. And just to give you a couple examples, Michael talked about me going to UT. I always wanted to be a Longhorn. Always wanted to play for the Longhorns. Coach Gus was a legendary coach. And I was good enough to get recruited by, you know, A&M and OU, TCU, UT. But I just had such blinders on for wanting to go to UT and play for Coach Gus that I ignored all the signs of what would probably be best for my life, best for my baseball career. And I ended up going up to Austin. I played in 5 games, lost my red shirt. I think I made a 1.8 my first semester because I went out all the time. I barely was staying in school. And at the end of the year, I realized that I had made a really bad decision and that I had missed all the signs of what was probably best for my life. And I ended up transferring to TCU, ended up being the greatest decision of my life. I came closer to the Lord. I met my wife there. I met some of my best friends there. My brother and sister both went there. And so that's just one example. We all have those kind of examples. Another one was playing minor league baseball. I always wanted to be a professional baseball player. And I can remember Red Murph. He was a scout that signed my dad. When I was about 16, he had me at a tryout camp in Brenham. And I was a good player. I mean, obviously, I played in college. I was all-conference. I got drafted. But he knew at that time I wasn't a major league player. And at the end of camp, he came over and put his arm around me. He said, well, son, if you like baseball, there's always jobs in the press box. And I'm like 16 years old. And, you know, I just was determined I was going to be a player. And I will say, I worked as hard at being a professional baseball player as anything I've done. And I missed opportunities to do things other kids do. Great things, whether it, you know, was going, you know, on trips or doing things with your family, everything I put into baseball. And there was a real hollow feeling after I got drafted and in my second season when I looked around me and I realized that none of these guys are pulling for me. They're all wanting me to do bad because only one guy is going to make it to the next level of A-ball to AA to AAA. And that it is a dog-eat-dog world and it is a very selfish world and that I felt like I had a higher calling to be able to do something in the game than just be a minor league baseball player and have my identity tied to that. And so those kind of things have continued to happen throughout my life. Many people here know my dad put a group together to buy the Rangers after he was president in 2008, and they went to a couple World Series, and then he ended up selling out in 2013. And one of the things I always wanted to do from the time I got into owning minor league teams was I wanted to own a big league team. But I think everybody gets in a situation where, you know, everything I do is turns to gold. I can't do anything wrong. And in 2008, I had taken all the money I had earned, and I had been very successful, and I put it on about 3 or 4 different bets on different businesses. And when that opportunity came around to invest in the Rangers, I had all my assets deployed and wasn't able to do it, and I missed that opportunity. And there was a lot of disappointment that came with that. There was a lot of soul-searching as to sort of, what do I want to be? Who do I want to be? And at the end of the day, I think that was the first time that I sort of trusted God to say, you know what, maybe this wasn't in the cards for me, because I could have done a lot of things and leveraged up and done some things. And at the end of the day, with him selling out and getting out of the Rangers, it would have been probably a really bad move for me. And so, you know, I've tried to learn that God has a plan for my life, whether it was TCU and meeting my wife, whether it was my failures as a minor league player led to my success with the Express and the Hooks, and eventually here with the Houston Astros. And I think of how many families and kids have enjoyed minor league baseball in those markets, and how what we did in Round Rock has paved the way for not one, not two, but probably 20 new stadiums around the country. We really changed the way that minor league baseball was done. Or even what we're doing here today with the Houston Astros. I think had I gone to Arlington and invested in that deal, I would have been in my dad's shadow and would never have been probably looked at in my own right. And so God had a plan for me, and although I was stubborn and bullheaded, eventually he revealed that to me. And so, you know, I think that's my challenge. It's the challenge every single day that I have, is to trust God. And I've done it through a lot of prayer. I think as I've gotten older, I've become better at praying and really looking deep and asking him to guide me. And recently, I did something that I probably would never have done. There's probably some people in this room that have done it. Over the holidays, Christmas and New Year's, my wife and my three kids and I went to Zambia to the Family Legacy Mission and spent a week at an orphanage over there serving others. And it ended up being one of the best experiences of my life. And I could honestly say that in years past, I would have said, no, I'm going skiing. I've earned this time off. I'm going fishing. I'm going hunting. Me, 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 me. But once you stop making it about yourself, it's amazing the benefits and the joys that you get out of something like that. And so if you've never done anything like that, I'd encourage you to do it. It was beyond whatever I could have set up as an expectation. I go back to the old saying, to whom much is given, much is expected. I've really had that belief since I was out of the hospital in 1979, that one, being Nolan Ryan's son, two, being born in America, three, having two parents that are still married 50 years this summer, you know, having the opportunities I've had, I felt like, look, you need to do some great things. And in my business life, I've been able to achieve a lot of those. I think in my spiritual life is where I'm going now on the second half of my life here, is how do I take those same opportunities? And it's by doing things like this morning. It's like doing things like going to Zambia. And as the Astros president, I'm in a position of leadership, and I'm in a public position. And so everywhere I go, people know what it is we're doing, or they know who I am. And so I've sort of taken the another old saying that a friend of mine always says, is that I'm trying to preach the gospel at all times and using words when necessary. So I'm trying to live it through my actions. And I feel like that without, you know, having my faith out there in the public manner, because I realize when people come to the ballpark, they're coming for different reasons. And if I can't overtly hit them with my faith, I can do it covertly through my actions and through the way I handle myself. And so that's really what I've tried to do, is build an organization with the Astros around servant leadership. And I've got Eric Varney here with me today. Eric works with me with the Astros, so he'll raise his hand. I always bring Eric when I do these talks. He lives way north. What time did you leave today? 5:30? 5:45. Eric is a great man, and I always bring him with me on these talks, because if people have questions about the Astros or anything, obviously with a group this size, people have to leave at 8. Eric's here and can answer any of your questions you have. And he can take credit cards as well if you want some tickets. But, you know, whether it's guys like Eric, whether it's our players, our broadcasters, through the servant leadership that really we've put in place with the Astros, I just try to preach to our guys. And we're not going to bat 1,000. Nobody does. It's really to tell our guys, look, you've been given a great opportunity. You're going to get to make a ton of money playing a game you love. But more importantly, you're a role model. And we've all heard, you know, folks like Charles Barkley say, well, I'm not a role model. Well, you are a role model. My dad was a role model, and he was able to carry on the hard work ethic that his mom and dad had of working two jobs, Depression-era parents. He was able to carry that work ethic, and that's what he was known for in his career, was a great work ethic, being a competitor, and being a great family man. And so I tell our guys, look, you have this opportunity. You can choose. You can either do a lot of good with this opportunity you've been given with the Houston Astros, Or, you know, you can waste it and you can do bad and you can embarrass your family and our organization. And most of our guys choose to do good. And I think a community really connects with a team when you have good players. Let's be honest. We have to be a good team or nobody wants to follow us when we're losing 100 games a year. But if we have good players that are good people, man, that's when you really connect with a community. And that's when you can transcend a lot of the things that are bad about sports or bad about life. And we have some of those guys. Jose Altuve, man, he's an incredible human being. I hope that we're able to keep him a long, long time. George Springer, another guy that's a tremendous person. Carlos Correa, you see the things these guys in their early to mid-20s are doing, whether it's Children's Charities of Houston or the Stuttering Association or working with Spring Spirit. Jose Altuve's been out there several times. We've got some good folks. And so I want to win for us, for the city of Houston. I want to make us proud, but I'd really love to see this group of guys win a World Series because they're really, really good people. But that's kind of my story. I'd love to open it up to any questions. Yes, sir. So you went on an MLK Day to the food bank? Yeah, I was there. In fact, Eric was there. We were all there. We've chosen as an organization a couple of charities for our players and for our staff to volunteer with, and one is the Star of Hope, which is a neighbor, and then the other is the food bank. And so we do a monthly working at the food bank, packing food and all that. And if you guys haven't ever done that, it's a great team-building event. Kids can come. It's a lot of fun, and our guys enjoy it a lot, and I appreciate you pointing that out. Yes, sir. Well, they were at the end of the street, and what was interesting was my dad signed that off season with the Astros, which was great because we came home. But I literally, it was like the first day of summer until the season was over. Never left my house or the hospital, so it was a it was a tough year. And actually, that year the Angels got in the playoffs against Baltimore. In 1979, lost to Baltimore. Baltimore ended up losing to Pittsburgh, if you remember, the We Are Family team. But I got to go with the club to Baltimore on the charter and with just my dad, and was a part of that whole playoff trip at the age of 8. So it was it ended up being a great end of the summer that year. Anybody else? Yes, sir. Well, I start by sort of my basis in life is that the wise man seeks the counsel of many. And so none of us have all the answers. And I think the only way that you can achieve success is to build good teams. And part of my life of growing up in Major League Baseball is that I've got to witness firsthand some really good teams and some really bad teams, things that work well and things that don't work well. And I think the best teams are ones where people's skill set complement one another. You know, I always tell people when I give speeches sometimes about leadership, I'll say, okay, if I could tell you right now, you've got Randy Johnson, you've got Nolan Ryan, Roger Clemens, we'll use Andy Pettit, and let's say Dallas Keuchel, who in here would take those guys? Everybody throws their hand up. But then I go, Randy Johnson's catching, Nolan Ryan's playing short, Roger's playing left field, Dallas Keuchel's in center, and Andy Pettit's in right. You don't want that team. You don't want any part of that team. So it's about putting people in positions to succeed. And so that's part of what I do, excuse me, is I think I'm good at being able to put people in positions to succeed and then encouraging them to run their own shops. No one likes to be micromanaged. And so from a faith perspective, when it comes to those decisions about, you know, what is right, what is wrong, I just go back to the golden rule, you know, treat everybody like you want to be treated. And the other thing is, in our business, we don't have anything anybody has to have. You know, we're not a commodity, we're not something, we're expendable income. And what people are giving us more than their money with the Astros, they're giving us their time. And when someone comes to the ballpark, they're escaping whatever the problems are in this real world. And we all know there's a lot of problems. And they want to come be with people they love, their kids, their family, their office. They want to watch guys chase a dream and achieve greatness. They want to be proud of their community and have a team that when they go to New York or Atlanta or LA, represent what we stand for. And so that's where those emotional connections happen. And I think it's realizing that the people that aren't of faith, they really want the same things that those of us with faith want. And that if we can help them get there, like I said, and one of my challenges, I think I should be more of an advocate for the Christian faith, but I walk that fine line sometimes. So if I can share my story of Zambia or my story of, you know, anything that I've had in my life that have happened, that's a good way to do it. And so it's just making those personal connections. Anybody have anything on the club or anything? Yes, sir. Yeah, so that's one of the greatest challenges we have in the game of baseball. In the NFL, all of the money from the television kind of goes into one pot, and they share it equally. And so the games really are not played for the people at NRG Stadium. They're played for everybody at home watching. Now, they still want to do well at NRG Stadium because that gives them, if they do really well, they can give them advantage over the other teams. Our model is completely backwards. You know, everybody keeps their local media rights. And so, for example, the Dodgers, I think they get $250-something million this year in their television deal. We get $60 million. So, I mean, they've done more than we've done in total revenue just off a check they get from their TV provider. The same on the Yankees and Red Sox. So the guys that are on the coast, they have so much more money than those of us in the middle of the country have. That it's really tough. And even the Rangers, because of the situations that were made at the end of the McLean era and when Jim was coming on board with the TV situation that all of us lived through, you know, they're going to be about $30 million ahead of us every single year for the exact same market. So what ends up happening is the players have continued to get a little over 50% of the money that is in the game. And, you know, look, they're the reason that people are coming, but it's really all about risk. These teams have more debt than they've ever had because of the stadiums, because of the cost to get into them, because of upgrades in the facilities. We just put in Wi-Fi a couple years ago. We're putting in this new center field. We have to continue to invest in the experience to compete with what folks can get at home and watching on television. And so we have no upside. If we kick a 10 rating out or we kick a 2 rating out and we have 500,000 people watching or 50,000, it doesn't affect our bottom line at all, other than building our own fan base. And so the challenge with all of this is that there's going to be haves and have-nots in baseball. And we have to have a disciplined approach. And I give Jim Crane a lot of credit for being able to sort of realize the economics of baseball. We have to develop from within. That's why it was so painful the year we lost all the games for 3 years in a row, because we traded all of our assets to get as many draft picks and prospects as we could. We have to build that system, and we have to have those guys come up, and then that success on the field hopefully will give us enough, you know, revenue to be able to keep free agents and sign them. And so this last year, really last 2 years, I think has been validation that we had a plan, we said we were going to do certain things, and now we've lived up and we've done them. But for us to take that next step, we're going to have to go deep in the playoffs. We're going to have to, you know, win a World Series. We're going to have to, you know, generate that extra postseason revenue to be able to put that back into the payroll. So you won't see us be the Yankees or the Dodgers and go chase every big free agent. You're going to see us disciplined, developing from within, and hopefully having enough money to bring in 2 or 3 free agents every year to help fill the needs till the next wave comes in. Yes, sir, and then I'll come to you. Yeah, so I think Moneyball's kind of, it's got two sides to it. One, everybody says Moneyball, and they talk about the book, but the A's haven't won anything. I mean, it was a great story about how to try to get the most out of, like, having a really bad economic situation. But they've never won anything, and they never talked about the 3 pitchers in that book that won, like, 60-something games between them, you know, when they had Zito, Mulder, and Hudson, you know, had guys that were winning Cy Youngs. It's still about pitching. But what I'll say to that is that that really kicked off this new era of what is big data, what is analytics, what is a professional, almost money manager's approach. And if you look at the GMs today in baseball, you know, there are guys like our GM, Jeff Luhnow, who, you know, he was working at McKinsey. It's guys that have looked at baseball differently. Now, everyone's pretty much caught up. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens if it reverts back to the advantage of being able to get over on the Yankees. You know, our payroll a couple years ago was probably half of theirs, and we beat them in the wild card game. And so that's sort of the great equalizer is that we have these expanded playoffs where 10 teams get in. But it's going to be interesting to see, once everybody gets to that level, how do you come up with the next big thing? And we're trying some stuff now, but it's really R&D. It's a lot of R&D. I mean, we've got these sensors that we're putting in bats to measure swing plane. We have, you know, guys that are breaking down this, what's called TrackMan, which is basically this Doppler radar that sits over the field. And so every throw, every movement of the baseball on the field is measured. Spin rates are measured. They can look at it from all these different angles. We're using these slow-mo cameras, just trying to get an advantage because they have more money than us. And so they can always, you know, just money whip us. So we've got to try to be smarter. We've got to try to make better decisions, and our margin for error is smaller. So Moneyball has led to a smarter approach to running baseball teams, but it hasn't changed that 90 wins still gets you in the playoffs. Nobody's hitting 500 today. The core metrics of baseball really have not changed. Nobody's winning 30 games. So it's given teams an advantage, a slight advantage, and now everyone's kind of caught up, and it's going to come down to who's best at drafting and developing, back to the old blocking and tackling of baseball, who can draft well and who can develop those guys. Yes, sir. Well, we're always looking to improve the club wherever we can. And the great challenge for us this offseason was, are McCullers and Keuchel going to be healthy? Both of these guys were on the DL at the end of the year. If they're healthy and you have a guy that was Cy Young and a 20-game winner and you have a kid who's one of the best right-handed prospects, you know, he's come up and dominated at times, wipeout slider, then you really don't have to make a move. But we want to improve the club. And so I think the approach that Jeff decided to take was the market was out of whack. The Chris Sale trade, you know, they gave up 5 prospects for him. We can't afford to do that. We have to hold on to these prospects. So there's things we can do, but you're never going to see us sort of overpay for somebody like that. You know, there's an old saying in baseball, the best trades you make are the best trades are the ones you never make, because everyone's trading their problems for somebody else's problems most of the time, and they think they can fix them. But, you know, you're better off probably holding pat. So we're going to go into spring training. We'll start the season, see what we have. And then if we need a move, we still have the trade deadline. Some teams will be out of it. There might be more guys on the market. But, you know, never count Jeff out. He's always on the phone, and it doesn't cost anything to talk, and so we're always talking. Yes, sir. Yeah, I think when you have young players, there's positives and negatives with those things. And, you know, a lot of these guys are still learning. So I'm not going to point to one or two things. Sometimes it's schedule. Sometimes you, guess what, you line up against the good teams early and you got the bad teams late. And you don't really know who's good and bad until you start playing them and you see. You know, sometimes it can be as simple as guys preparing for spring training. You know, one of the moves that we made with going to West Palm is in Kissimmee, all of our neighbors moved away over the last 30 years. So every other day, our guys, unless we were going to Disney to play the Braves, were on the bus 2.5-3 hours one way, 2.5-3 hours back in traffic. We came out of spring training, you know, like we had been studying for finals for a month. You know, I mean, we were not rested. So we're hoping now we only take 3 trips out of the West Palm area because there's 5 teams within 45 minutes of us. So we think it's going to be hopefully be a better start for us. But the year we went to the playoffs in 15, we started out gangbusters. I mean, mean, we had one of the best first months of the season. Last year, we had one of the worst first months. So I think it's a maturing of our players, realizing that when the bell rings, it's time to go play ball, and that every single game matters. You lose one in April, it matters the exact same as losing one in September. Yes, sir. Yeah, I mean, it's been talked a lot at our league meetings, and it is a concern for us. What's interesting is the number of pitches in a game of baseball really hasn't changed from the 1950s. The number of hits, all those things. What's happened is it's the time in between balls in action, and a lot of that has to do with the emphasis of the walk the last couple years and on-base percentage. So you have guys trying to work walks, so you have more pitches. Also, you have all of the information now that we talked about, whether it's shifts or whether it's left on left versus right on right, and there's no secrets anymore. Everything is digitized, and a computer spits out the matchups right away. So that's why you're seeing so many pitching changes late in games. Also, you know, in my dad's era, it was a four-man rotation. They pitched every day. They threw lots of innings. You know, you had lots of position players. Now, our big decision is we're going to have 12 pitchers, 12 position players, and who's our 25th guy? Is it Tyler White, or, you know, is it one of our young relief pitchers? You know, who's going to be that? And so a lot of teams are carrying more pitchers today. So you're getting all those matchups. So I think those things are being looked at. My dad believes it's batting gloves, because when guys didn't have batting gloves, nobody stepped out and did this seven times. You know, you watch Altuve after every pitch, it's ch-ch-ch-ch, wonk, wonk, wonk. You know, he does his helmet. And guys get in a rhythm of what it is they do. And, you know, we put the clocks in because it's just a chop, chop. Come on. Come on. We're all here. It's a great game, and people love the action. They love the mental side of our game. We just need to give them more of it. And you're going to continue to see efforts made to do that. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't have a pitch clock in the big leagues eventually. We have it in AA and AAA. It's worked great. Games are averaging about 2.5 hours. I thought it was going to be in this CBA. It wasn't. So, you know, hopefully in the next one in 5 years, we'll have the pitch clock, and I think that'll be really good for baseball. Yes? In the stadium? Are you talking about at home? At home. When you're watching at your house? Not one governing body making any of those decisions. Each one of these broadcasts have their own producer and director, and so I don't know what you're watching, but our guys are pretty good about knowing folks want to see that. All right. I think we're
–
last one. Yes, sir.
When the infield shifts one way or the other for a left or right-handed batter, why does the outfield shift the other way?
It's whatever the data says that this player does. So, yeah, to be honest with you, and it's not the same for every single player. So what's amazing we have, and I'll end it quick here, but we have guys that we have a – we call it like the film room, but it's basically these guys on computers. And today, every single pitch of your – you know, I'm trying to see who the oldest guy is in Major League Baseball right now, but let's just even use, before he retired, Derek Jeter. Every pitch that Derek Jeter ever had is digitized and on a computer. So you can pull it up. Populate the strike zone with a million pitches. You can click on any one of those, and the video of that at bat comes up. So our guys, Keiko, will go in, and we're going to play, you know, the Angels. He'll say, hey, let me see every at bat that I've ever pitched to Pujols. And then before it comes up over on another screen, it'll say 72% of the time you got him out on changeups or whatever. There's so much information. There are literally no secrets. And it comes back to who executes better. Can I beat your weakness with my strength, or am I going to make a mistake to your strength, and are you going to beat me? So, amazing stuff. Thank you guys very much. God bless you.